So as I mentioned, we're in Love Songs. It's our series through the Song of Solomon. And so each week we're looking at this really amazing book of the Bible that oftentimes we don't spend a lot of time in. Because one, we don't understand it, and two, there's some really like, you're like, that's in the Bible. Okay. And so with that, we wanted to take some time and kind of walk through this. One, to help us to understand how do we do relationships better, especially in the context of marriage. But not just that, what do we learn about God through this? Because this is not just any book. This is a theological book. So what we read in this is going to teach us about God. And so what we talked about each week is that human love is an imperfect reflection of God's greater love, right? Because even within the most amazing marriages, it's merely just an imperfect reflection because we're imperfect humans trying to love each other. But through this book, we're learning about how imperfect humans try to love each other, but it's meant to point to us as a reflection of God's greater love. And so as we've walked through this, we've tried to point out, here's how this shows us who God is and how he loves you and how he loves us and loves his children. And so as we walk through that, we tried to draw that out. So today we're going to look at that. And so just to kind of see where we've gone in this book so far, we've talked a little bit about the pursuit within a relationship. We've talked about like the marriage and what marriage is and why it matters. We've talked about the honeymoon, right? What happens after you're married? A lot of fun in that one. That was a fun message. Go back and listen to that one. And then right after the honeymoon, it's conflict because that's just right. That's how relationships happen. It's the highest of highs, and then all of a sudden you come down, and it's like real life hits you in the face. And how do we handle and navigate conflict? And so today we really wanted to kind of look at how do we cultivate and create the kind of marriages that really last. And one of my favorite things at weddings is the anniversary dance. If you've been to a wedding before, perhaps you've seen that. Now, I've been to a couple Mennonite weddings, and there is no dancing, right? You're about to say Mennonite dances? That's not even a thing. You're making that up, right? A couple Mennonite weddings. I know there's no dancing going on there, but we did this at our wedding. Maybe you've been to a wedding and you've seen this, but there's the anniversary dance, and here's what happens, right? They bring all the couples that are married out on the stage, and what do? They have them all dance. A little slow dance that's there. And then little by little, like the DJ kind of says, if you've been married right today, right, sit down. So like the newlyweds, right, are the first ones off the floor. But then it kind of moves on up. And really what it's trying to show you is like who's been there and they've been married the longest, right? And it's often really amazing to see. It's some grandparents, great-grandparents, and you just see the gray hairs, sometimes no hairs, and you just see this love they have for each other. I think just recently, Daryl and Sharon Yoder, like 70 years, is that right? About 70 years you guys have been married? And so I think I heard of that. So it's amazing, right? Like just, yeah, we can definitely applaud that. But I'm thinking and here's kind of what goes through my mind, is how do they do that? Like how do they stay married for 60, 70, 75 years. Like, is it just, well, we can't do any better, so we might as well just stay together, right? Like, I imagine, right, there's been some practices, some habits, some intentional decisions, some ways that they've lived and been married that has helped that to happen. And so as we're in this section of Song of Solomon, I think there's some really practical things that we can start to take from to kind of show us how do we kind of create those kind of marriages that last. What leads to a lasting marriage? Now, it's not an exhaustive list, so it doesn't mention everything. There are a lot of other really good things, but kind of looking through this text and looking at where it's kind of at in their relationship in the text, I feel like it's really fitting because we're still seeing this couple madly in love with each other, likely years after the wedding day. And so how do we kind of create those kind of marriages and relationships? Because we live in a culture where marriage is hard. Right, it's always been hard, but it feels like even more so. We hear more and more of divorce. We hear more and more of people delaying to get married. We live in a day and age now where there are more people who aren't married than are married. Now, that also includes people who have been divorced or people who have waited to get married but who one day will want to get married. But still, statistically, most people want to get married. And even if people who have been divorced and they're believers, studies tell us that they're twice as likely to want to get remarried. And so there's still this desire to want to be married. And so while what we're talking today is how do marriages last, if you're not married, this isn't like, well, I guess this isn't for me. I'll just kind of, you know, put it up. No, the reality is maybe for many of you, you would like to be married again or you would want to be married one day. And so what are the things you look for? Or how do you help kind of your friends who are married? How do you help their marriages continue to thrive? How do you encourage that within them? And so I think there'll be some really helpful things around marriage today that we can really take and apply to our lives. Because God's word doesn't return void. I think he teaches us no matter what kind of season of life that we are in. And so today, here's what I want us to see as we look at Song of Solomon, chapter 7. We're going to look at about 13 verses there. We're going to see this is that the best of marriages form the best of friends. The best of marriages form the best of friends. Because I don't know about you, right? I want a marriage that's not just okay. Who in here is like, I can't wait to have an okay marriage one day, right? Or just a meh kind of marriage, right? Like, sign me up for the marriage that just kind of gets through. No, I think we all want a great marriage. We all want, when we get married, we want to say, I want to have the best marriage I can. And here's one of the things I think that we see, that the best of marriages, here's what they form within that couple. They form the best of friends. That what we see growing with these couples that have great marriages is that they're also great friends. They're great friends with each other. They love each other. They don't just share a home. They don't just share children. They share a life together. And they enjoy one another. And so we're going to see that as we walk through this. So we're going to see here, how do we do that? Well, we keep, one of the things that we see is we're going to keep admiring our spouse. We keep desiring our spouse, and we keep getting away with our spouse. And so as we look at this first point, keep admiring your spouse, we're going to see here in chapter 7, verse 1, where Solomon is going to go in and he's going to start describing his wife again. And you're like, this guy, he just keeps finding new ways to describe his wife. And it's like, yeah, he does. And you know this, like, remember, this is a song. And so when you listen to songs, things repeat, don't they? Right? There are repeated chorus or lines or phrases. And so as we work through this, we're going to realize there's going to be some repetition, things that he's going to mention again because they matter, that they're important to him. So one of the first things that we see as he starts to jump in verse 1 is that this man keeps admiring his spouse, keeps describing her. So look with me in verse 1. He says, "How beautiful are your feet in sandals, O noble daughter. Your rounded thighs are like jewels, the work of a master hand." And then he go down, he just kind of keeps, this time he's working from foot and works his way up from toe to head. But in verse 6, he goes in and he tells us, "How beautiful and pleasant you are, O loved one, with all of your delights." You see, one of the things that I see reading through that again, this is the third time that he is describing his bride. Why? Well, because friends appreciate each other. They don't just say what they admire about you once, right? That they keep on appreciating and admiring and admonishing each other. I think sometimes, right, that can slip for marriages, especially for husbands, right? We can kind of stop noticing our wives, and maybe wives can sometimes stop feeling noticed. We're like, hey, I said I love you. I said you're beautiful, right? But do we keep kind of admiring and admonishing our significant others? Because here in this text, he's not dulled by his wife. He in essence isn't like, she's okay now. No, he's keeping using his words to express how he feels about her. I think that's so important for us as guys, to keep using our words to communicate to our significant others and to communicate to our spouse what we admire about them. Yes, it may be some of their physical appearance, but absolutely their character. Absolutely their kind of resolve. It may be shooting them a text message. It may be, you know, praying over your spouse, words that you admire and admonish and care about them. It could be notes that you write to them. Like, just finding ways to communicate, man, here's what I love and appreciate about you. Maybe it's her feet and sandals. I don't know. You don't have to go with feet. You don't have to go with rounded thighs, but you could find other things that you admire and you appreciate about your spouse. Because here's what 1 Peter 3 tells us. 1 Peter 3, Peter's telling husbands to live with your wives in an understanding way. And what's great about that text, that understanding way, it's not just live with your wives so that they can put up with you, which sometimes wives, that's what you're doing already. You're just trying to put up with your man. But he's saying here, live with your wives in such a way that you are learning about them. That understanding says you are continuing to be a student of your spouse. Now, I think that that's true for women and for men, but particularly in this context, for men, right? To keep learning things about your significant other. Because here's what I know about all of us. We change. We grow and we change. Here's what changes us. We change because we go through different seasons, right? You're different now if you have kids than when you were like before kids. right? You're different now after you've been married for 5 years or 10 years or 30 years, right? Some of your interests change. And so it's continuing to learn about your spouse, to live with them in an understanding way, being a student of your significant other. We take a lot of time in the dating phase to learn about them, don't we? You learn about what kind of music they like. You learn about the kind of food they like to eat. You learn about the places they like to go to. And then it's like we treat the wedding day like the finish line. I don't no longer, it's like the hunter has caught the game, and now it's like it's over. And if that's kind of your mentality, you're not going to keep cultivating a friendship with your spouse. You're not going to keep learning and admiring and pursuing the one you love and care about. See, one of the things that Scripture teaches us is that our words either build up or they tear down, don't they? And you see Solomon here, how is he using his words? Man, he's building up his bride. And you notice it as you work through this text and even through this book, you hear the way she talks about herself. Do you remember early on in week one, she was in essence very insecure about how she looked, wasn't she? She was like, I have a darker complexion. I've been out in the sun. You could kind of sense that there are parts of her that she was ashamed of or insecure about. And yet his continual praise and encouragement in her life, it's built her up, hasn't it? You see, the people that I, you know, that our staff and that as pastors we get to talk with, maybe marriages that struggle, marriages that are going through a hard time, here's what we don't often hear. My spouse encourages me way too much. I'm fed up with it. That's never the case, is it? No, what's often is our words become, rather than building others up, it tears them down. We're overly critical, right? And it's sometimes not just the words that we use, but it can be the way that we use them, right? The tone with which we say things, the timing with which we say things. You got to learn about that, guys. Like, it's not just what you say, but it's when you say it and how you say it. I know, it's so complicated. You're like, I said the right. It's like, well, there's a lot to it. And so it's learning how to use your words to build each other up. And so think about that in your marriages, in your relationships. How am I using my words to build up the people around me? Yes, with your spouse, but also if you just have friends in your life. Like, are you the friend that, man, people love to share good news with? Because you are an encourager. You're a cheerleader for them. Or do you find yourself getting resentful, jealous, envious? Are you overly critical? We want to use our words. Ephesians tells us, right, to not let any unwholesome talk or foolish talk come out of our mouths, but only that which is, that builds up. That's good for building up, that it may give grace to those who hear. And so we see that the kind of language we use is matters. Not just the words that we say, that we shouldn't say bad words or, you know, have, you know, joking that's, you know, not appropriate, but using your words to build other people up rather than using our words to tear them down. So we see here that he admires his spouse. He's still crazy about her. And if you doubt that, let's look at verse 7 and you'll see how Solomon keeps desiring his spouse. Verse 7, your stature is like a palm tree. And your breasts are like its clusters. I'm not going to keep going. We've went into that. But if you want to read verses 8, 9, go right ahead. You will see he is still very much attracted and drawn to some certain features about his bride. You see, but you go down to verse 10, and here's what really stood out to me. Not just that he's continuing to describe her and desire her. This isn't just a romantic or sexual desire, but look in verse 10. She says, I am my beloved's. And his desire is for me. You see, here's what I think is going on here. It's not that she feels like she's some object to be used by her husband. But what we see here is she recognizes, my husband, he's madly in love with me. Like when I think about the things that he cares about, the things that he values, his desire is for me. I am my beloved's and his desire is for me. Now, imagine for those of you that have been married, and it's probably pretty easy after that first week maybe to say, like, man, like, what do you love most? And they'd be like, man, I love my wife or I love my husband. But you get 5, 10, 15 years, and what can happen? Other things become more important to us. What's the most important thing in our life? It can be our children. running them around their schedules. We got them all involved in things. It can be our jobs. Man, our work is constantly pulling us away. It's always, you know, you're at home, but you're not off the clock. Texts coming in, emails coming in, people that you need. It can be just hobbies. Some of you, like, you love to get out and do things and to, you know, to go and hang out with friends or to go, you know, hunting or fishing or whatever the things may be. And hobbies can all of a sudden become this priority. And what can end up happening is we lose our love. We lose the love that we had for our spouse. That they can't say, I am my beloved's, and his desire's for me. That I still feel like I'm outside of their relationship with Jesus. I'm the most important thing in their life. Nothing takes priority over our relationship except for our relationship with Jesus. But how often are we able to communicate and say that? I feel like this isn't, again, he's not just talking about this sexual desire. It's relational desire. You see, one of the things that we see going on here is that I am my beloved's and his desire is for me. This isn't the first time that they've mentioned this. In chapter 2, she says, my beloved is mine, and I am his. Right? She's saying, hey, I am mine, and he is mine, and I am his. So there's this kind of possessive, like, hey, I know that there's this exclusivity, that we're with each other. And then in chapter 6, verse 3, I am my beloved's, and my beloved is mine. Kind of that same kind of communication, right? That I know that they love me, and I love them, and that we're exclusive, and we're committed to each other. But notice, the longer that they've been together, notice what changes in their tone. It's not just, man, I am my beloved's and he is mine. No, I am my beloved's and his desire is for me. His desire is for me. I think one of the deepest needs that we have in our marriages is to know you still want me. You still want me. You still want to be with me. After 4, 5, 6 children, you know, after 40, 50 years when the hair starts to go away, or the hair, you know, the beautiful brown, black hair gets replaced by gray, or those biceps get a little bit more flimsy. It's more than just physical and external. You still want me. Not just, you. Well, I said I do till death do us part, so I'm going to be committed to you. You see, deep down, we all want to be wanted, don't we? We all want to feel wanted, especially by the people that matter the most to us. What's really great is this past week, Michelle and I got to celebrate 16 years of being married. And one of the things that, right, you do on anniversaries is, you know, you want to get some time together, get some time away. And so, you know, I made a reservation for us to go out to dinner, to get a nice dinner, pricey dinner, right? But it was really good food. It was really, really good, right? And so we get a babysitter, you know, come and watch the kids, and we're going to go out to eat. You know, I got the boys and we washed the car because we wanted to look all pretty as we went out to eat, you know. And so imagine if this is how it goes, okay? So we get dressed up, we come down, and, you know, we babysitter comes, we get all the things squared away, we go out to eat, we're sitting down, there's, you know, it's beautiful smelling, it's a great restaurant, and happy anniversary card there. And, you know, she looks across at me and she's like, man, I'm so glad that we get to get this time together. And I look at her and I say, it's my duty. It's my duty. It's what I'm supposed to do. It's our anniversary. We're supposed to do this. I've got this obligation. Every year, once a year, I have to take you out to celebrate the fact that we're married together. Now, you may see, Lee, that is your last anniversary that you'll have, because what woman's going to put up with that, right? What does that communicate to her? It's not just, man, I love you. I want you. I'm crazy about you. No, all that says is duty, obligation, and I'm tolerating her. No woman feels, oh, wow, I've hit the jackpot in my marriage, right? No, it doesn't communicate that at all. Rather, right, we're sitting across the table, and it's like, man, I'm so glad we got to spend this time together. It's like, I know I've been looking forward to this for months, for weeks, to sit down for 2 hours. It doesn't take us 2 hours, but man, we're going to take all the time we can, because we're not trying to fight kids of saying, hey, put that down, quit wrestling, get your hands off of that. Well, how quickly can we get in and out of here, right? Like, we're just sitting down enjoying the meal, looking at each other eyeball to eyeball, checking in. How are you doing? I know the last year has been crazy and busy. You know, how can I love you better? How can we continue to to pursue and make time for each other, right? Those kinds of meaningful conversations. Because at the end of the day, I want her to know and to feel I'm just as in love with her, if not more so, now than I was 16 years ago. When we were young, in our prime, looking all good with our friends around us, having a great time. But no, looking at each other now, still crazy about each other. Because I want her to know that we're still friends. We're still friends. We're still passionate about each other. Joby Martin, a pastor down in Florida, said this. He said, your love can grow old, or you can grow old in love. And I love that, because what he's trying to say is when you're married, your love, it can kind of grow old. There's a sense of drifting apart, right? You can have a sense of like, man, your love is there, but it ages, not in a good way. Or there's this choice that you can have, because love is ultimately, it's choosing to love every day. Choosing to say, I want to put your needs above my own. I want to serve you and care for you. And so your love can either grow old, or you can grow old in love with each other. You can grow old. And so how do we keep doing that? Well, let's look at our third point, and where we see the importance to keep getting away with your spouse. Verse 11, come, my beloved, let us go out into the fields and lodge in the villages. Let us go out early to the vineyards, see whether the vines have budded, whether the grapes blossom, have opened, and the pomegranates are in bloom. There I will give you my love. The mandrakes give forth fragrance, and beside our doors are all choice fruits, new as well as old, which I have laid up for you, O my beloved. You see, what we kind of see, we can read here, is she's saying, let us go out into the fields and lodge in the villages. You see this sense of they want to get away together. Right? They have their home. They have their kind of home base. And yes, they're intentional there, but it also says, hey, it's important to just get away. Right? And it doesn't sound like they're going on a long journey away for weeks or months at a time. It sounds like it's an overnight, it's a weekend getaway, it's a date night out of the house. It's going somewhere. And she's like, hey, let's go look at the vineyards. Let's go look at the fruits. See if the pomegranates are in blossom, right? There's a sense of she's saying, hey, I want to go and have fun with you. I want to go and let us enjoy and have conversations, not have the chaos around us of our home life and the demands of work, but to get away. Because in that culture, right, you went somewhere, they couldn't find you, they couldn't text you, they couldn't call you, they had to send a search party to get you, right? Like, it was a lot harder to get communication with. You see, but what we're seeing here is so important is friends, they make time for each other, don't they? And you know this, if you're not married, the friends you have in your life, if you don't make time for them, guess what? Those friendships fade, don't they? There are friends that you used to have that you don't have anymore. Why? Because sometimes time is limited and you just don't have the time that you have with them anymore. Or the other side of it, you have friends that you're saying, hey, I want to keep this friendship, so what do? You make time for each other. Guys, you go on guy trips, you go on four-wheelers, you go hunting, go fishing, you go, we're going to go hang out, even if it's once a year. You're like, man, I can't wait to have my guys trip. Ladies, to go have your girls trip or your girls weekend or your getaways or to go and just hang out, go to a ball game together, go to the spa together. Just finding time to say, hey, I know that if we're going to keep this friendship, we got to make time for it. And sadly, what ends up happening in our marriages is it gets the leftover time, doesn't it? It just gets what's left from you. After your job, after your kids, after hobbies, after church, you just kind of get what's left gets over, gets to your spouse. And there are seasons where it's just, it can be heavy and demanding. But the problem is seasons become the normal. And what you end up finding is that marriage is, you're not as close as you used to be because you just haven't been making the time for each other like you used to. And so what we see here is they see this priority to say, hey, you're so important that I want to get time with you away. And so maybe what that looks like is you look at your calendar and you say, hey, how can we intentionally plan time together that's uninterrupted where you can get alone? Maybe it's once a month you have a date night, twice a month, whatever it may be, every week, go crazy. Maybe you say, hey, I want once a year to let us get a time where we can just go overnight somewhere. You know, go to Amish country, to Holmes County, go just get away, go down to Hocking Hills, not just with the kids, right? Because that is not a vacation, right? I was just talking to Taylor. They went on vacation with their kids, and I reminded her. She was like, yeah, it was exhausting. I said, yeah, it was a family trip. It wasn't a vacation. That's what my wife likes to say. It's a family trip, not a vacation. And so, but to find literally this time where it's your rejuvenate, and it's not just you go and you stay the night somewhere, but you go do something fun together. You go walking, you go on hikes. Like, they went to the vineyards. They went to go check out, like, what do you enjoy doing together? Husbands, maybe it's whatever your wife likes to do. Go do what she wants to do, not just what you want to go do. And vice versa, find something that you can just go and laugh together. Because friends that play together, stay together. Friends that play together, stay together. Marriages, spouses that play together, stay together. When you're laughing and having fun, enjoying one another, man, it is hard to get in the middle of that and to break that up. Now, is that all marriages is? It's not just every day go play and have fun. No, that's not reality. But man, if you're not finding time to just have fun with each other, can you really say that you're friends? Can you really say that, man, we're cultivating this friendship with each other? Because the best of marriages, what they want to form and what they form over time is they form the best of friends with each other. Because it's not just that you have fun and laugh together and go on trips together and just have shared experiences together, but it's in that fun that's forging this connection that when the trials and the difficulties in life come, that you're so connected that nothing is going to get in the way to divide that. And I think sometimes because we don't have that connection, because we haven't been pursuing friendship together, that you drift apart and it's easier to get in and separate. The best of marriages form the best of friends. So as we think about this, and as we kind of begin to wrap up, as I wondered, like, how do we do that? Like, how do we, yes, we could get away, yes, we can admonish and admire, yes, we can keep desiring, but where does that come from? Where does that show up with inside of us? And again, if human love is an imperfect reflection of God's greater love, what does this kind of teach us about God's love for us? And my mind went right to John 15. Let me read this. Jesus, we sang about abiding earlier. Greater love, and you may have heard, greater love has no one than this, that someone lay down his life for what? His friends. His friends. Not his, you know, constituents, his clients, you know, his obligations, his friends. You are my friends if you do what I command you. No longer do I call you servants, for the servant doesn't know what his master is doing, but I have called you friends. I have called you friends. For all that I have heard from my Father, I have made known to you. How do we become friends with our spouse? We see here first, it comes by becoming friends with Jesus, becoming friends with him. Because he laid down his life for his friends. And here's what begins to happen. You learn friendship with Jesus, how to then be friends with others. How to be friends with your spouse. How to be friends with your friends. Because what do we see in Jesus? We see somebody, right, who laid down his life, who sacrificed, who said, hey, I know what they need, and I'm going to put their needs above my own. I see that I'm going to pursue them. I'm going to run after them. I'm going to let them know how I feel and how I love them. God rejoices over us with loud singing, Zephaniah tells us. I'm going to endure patiently for them. I'm going to forgive them when they wrong me. We see so much in them, in Christ, what a real friend looks like. And friends, when we understand the friendship that we get to have with Jesus, it teaches us how to be friends with our spouse. We get away with Jesus You don't got to go overnight to a weekend retreat. You can, and that can be meaningful, but maybe just you start each day saying, hey, I want to get away, get some alone time with me and Jesus, talking to him, reading his word, letting his words encourage me, build me up, not tear me down, strengthen me, not weaken me, call out some things in me that are sin in my heart, but he's going to do so with grace and truth. Man, I'm going to read and see how Jesus desires me, how he pursues me, how he loves me. He demonstrates his love by laying down his life for me. It's our friendship with Jesus that helps us to be the friends that we need to be to our spouses and that we need to be to others. We can try it outside of that, but friends, when we understand the relationship that we get to have with Christ, it should flow through us to the other relationships that we have in our lives. And so maybe a question you can begin today, every one of us in here can say, how is your friendship with Jesus going? Are you even friends with Jesus? Have you trusted him with your life? And maybe you have. But maybe you realize I'm not getting time with him, I'm trying to maybe squeeze him in my day. He's getting my leftovers. Maybe a step to say, hey, my first step today is beginning to cultivate my friendship with Christ. And then maybe this week, a question you can ask if you're married to your spouse is, what kind of a friend am I being to you? How am I doing at being your friend? And just listen. You don't got to be critical and judgmental, but listen. And they may say, you're doing great. And here's specifically what you're doing great at. Or maybe I felt a little bit like I haven't been important to you. Your phone's been more important. Work's been more important. Maybe I just haven't felt like a priority in your life lately. And while that's never fun to hear, imagine if they keep holding that in and all of a sudden there's this distance and distance and distance. And pretty soon when you try to work through that, there's been so much distance that it feels like it's going to take forever to bring that back. I'd rather know that when we're this far apart than this far apart. And then you can say, okay, how can I begin to work on that? Jesus, how can I be a better friend to the person I care most about? Because at the end of the day, that's what Jesus wants for you and me. To let our friendship with him flow in and through us to the relationships that matter most to us. Would you bow your heads and pray with me? God, as I think about our lives, and I think about, Lord, the challenges that come within our marriages, Lord, so often we are under attack. There's so much competing for our time and affections. But Jesus, I'm so grateful that in you we have this perfect example of someone who never makes us feel like we're second best, that we're not important, that we're not a priority, that you give us your leftovers. No, as they enjoyed the choicest fruits, God, you gave us your first and your best, your life. And so I pray for anybody here today, God, that maybe what's lacking in their life is a friendship with you today. That maybe the step that begins to change everything in their life is realizing that they've been trying to go at it on their own, but today they need to surrender and realize that they need to put their faith and trust in you today, Jesus. So that you could transform them to become, Lord, who you want them to be. And God, help our marriages continue to grow, to have friendships, God, that form the best marriages because they're flowing out of the best of friends together. We need your help to do that, Lord. But God, we always have hope because of what you have done for us, Jesus, and what you're continuing to do in and through us. God, for your glory and our good. Pray this all in Jesus' name. Amen.